This is WUOT. I'm Chrissy Kuiper. Bill Lee is about to wrap up his first year as Tennessee's governor. Mark O'Gorman is a professor of political science and environmental studies at Maryville College, and we spoke with him about some of the aspects of Lee's first year in the office. He took office last January.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a busy year for him.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone who really didn't talk to the press much for the first couple of months that he was in mm-hmm. office, he's been in the press for the rest of the year, it seems mm-hmm. like, every day. Looking back over the year, what do you see as the most notable in the first year of mm-hmm. Lee's governorship?
Well, probably maybe it's like one theme, and that is consistency, before we may drill down into specifics. The fact that he came into office in the 2018 election cycle as someone who promised, coming from almost a particular business background, he certainly didn't want to have a significant part of increase in government. He wanted to reduce the regulatory structures that would be either impacting businesses or preventing businesses from growing, to try to make sure that the rural voters in Tennessee got their fair share. And so you're seeing that level of consistency, which I think is at one level what probably people in Tennessee and any constituency wants to see from him. So I think that's good. The voucher program clearly was something that he wanted to move forward on, and that would kind of be consistent with kind of a small C government, a small C conservative, fiscal conservative, let keep government out of the hands and let residents or people have choice. And so the voucher program in the two of the metro areas, I think they get like a debit card with multiple thousands of dollars on it, and those people can choose where they want to put those funds for whatever program have. Obviously, that puts the responsibility in the parent, but that becomes pretty complex. What kind of revenue shifts are you going to see in those two metro areas? And that becomes incredibly complex, to say the least. If you're suddenly someone who's trying to manage a budget in each of those two education areas, suddenly you really don't know where the dollars are coming from.
Right.
He's consistent, but at the same time, it's clearly showing that consistent in terms of kind of a small C conservative approach. But I think that one is something you're going to see traction on going forward. Will that pilot program in those two areas in Memphis and Nashville, will that move forward into other areas? Since we're one of the biggest Nashville areas, is Knoxville the next layer? Do we get next dibs, so to speak? That's probably a stay tuned on that one. But that's clearly what a lot of folks are watching on in terms of education.
Not to mention that it still hasn't been cleared up whether or not those education savings accounts are taxable on a federal level.
Yes.
As income.
That's right.
What do you mean by small C conservative?
Yeah, small C conservative, fiscal conservative. The idea there being is the fact that usually, and I've seen this traditionally with the Tennessee Republican legislatures have been elected, they are very comfortable with less government, a more fiscally restrained budget, a budget that clearly gets a surplus rather than goes into deficit, with the argument is from big spending programs, big government rolling down the road. And also in terms of the small C, in terms of at least in some areas, trying to make sure that the phrase is, get government off people's back. Fewer regulations if you're a business owner, fewer regulations in your personal life. And so as a result of that, that's what sometimes you see in terms of the small C. It may not be as dramatic as, say, other Republican legislators in Washington, D.C. President Trump administration clearly, is focusing so much of the discussion about Republican politics. But I think Governor Lee seems to be consistent in that way with the, so to speak, the small C version.
Let's talk about surpluses for mm-hmm. just a second as an aside.
Mm-hmm.
How is a surplus beneficial to a state and its residents if the government is less about spending?
Mm-hmm. It's a good question. The argument that I believe I've heard Governor Lee and past governors make is starts with what they call that rainy day fund. And that the idea is the fact that there's any kind of anything from a catastrophe to a need in terms of disaster relief or any kind of one-time infusion because of something that just needs to happen. Or maybe as a result of maybe sales tax or a change in revenue, the revenue stream might suddenly, if not dry up, reduce significantly, maybe because of an economic downturn. The argument is that rainy day fund is there to make sure that at least the next fiscal year's budget can come into balance, that at least those monies can go in to support that. Now, but back to your question, the argument always is that if you're a small C fiscal conservative, shouldn't you be balancing that budget, not having these big rainy day funds? Shouldn't those dollars be, frankly, rolling out the door? If you're a taxpayer, you're saying, wait a second, the argument is, I paid taxes 3 years in a row, and they say they still have money. Maybe I shouldn't have to pay so much taxes. Of course, in Tennessee, we're not income tax. We're sales tax based. And so you don't necessarily have that, I don't know if the right word is, political power to kind of, talk about your income tax. It's only sales tax in Tennessee. But I think that's one of the arguments. And I'm sure folks are kind of wondering, just as this the big fancy gymnast corpus of dollars starts to build up in Nashville, at some point, and it's already occurring with some of the discussion regarding TANF, the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, and some of the TennCare block grants are thinking about, there's a real discussion, when are these funds going to be released and how? Because if you've got them, maybe the argument is to use them.
Funding across the nation being cut for environmental policy. Mm-hmm. And of course, as the Environmental Protection Agency is losing federal funding, and states are expected to kind of pick up the slack for the EPA, states are cutting environmental funding.
This is without a doubt, with regard to more than a few states, especially states that have Republican-led governments and also the Trump administration. There are a few areas where you've seen a significant or regulatory reduction, as has been in the environmental circles. Regulation after regulation, either cut or amended or changed in some way to basically allow chemicals that were monitored at a certain level before to be less monitored or not even monitored at all. The argument the Trump administration provides, and I think you see an extension of that with Governor Lee, is that by getting the regulatory burden of the environment off entrepreneurs, it allows, they argue, it allows to unleash business and allows greater business to come into a state that they would argue, like in Tennessee, has fewer environmental regulations. They can begin to grow and move forward. The bad joke, the dirty little secret, is the fact that if you have that kind of reduced funding, there is no doubt that you're going to see, not quickly, but sooner than people realize, a decrease in the quality of the air and the quality of the water in Tennessee. If you have 20% less environmental agency funding in the equivalent of TDEC, Tennessee Department of Environmental Conservation, or some of the other or agencies, or if you have a 21% reduction in employees, you just aren't going to have that many inspections. You aren't going to be able to process that much material coming in terms of material like reports and databases. And so as a result, there could be gaps and errors. And sometimes it's difficult when folks talk about the environment. It's like, oh, it's a beautiful day in the Smokies. Well, then suddenly you're in a place where suddenly the water quality and this in the water system that you were using to drink, you're not as certain how clean it is going forward. And that's where the state environmental policymakers are so adept at keeping track of what's occurring at the local level. An example, we're going to be coming up against the anniversary of the Kingston coal ash spill that occurred late December 2008.
Yeah.
Much of that assessment and monitoring was not EPA. It was as much TDEC at the state level as anything the national did. And then the question is, wow, if there were 20% fewer employees working on that site, it would just take that much longer to clean up. Sometimes we forget. We take the environment for granted a little bit more. It's like, oh, it'll clean itself up. A rainy day will become a sunny day. And we sometimes forget that when we're dealing with issues of water quality and air quality, humans are the ones that are to blame more often than not. And we need to have some kind of monitoring. More often than not, most of your environmental problems usually are the day-to-day, the hidden horror, for lack of a better word. Some event occurring where suddenly there's some effluent dumped into a stream, or someone is not being monitored well, and suddenly something more goes into the atmosphere, and it's those that's all those different individual actions that creates the tragedy that we might have to have more monitoring on. And I get Governor Lee in believing that maybe that the air is clean enough and the water is clean enough, but those of us who are keeping track of climate change issues, it will take huge amounts of resources and commitments to clean the climate, to bring the climate anywhere near back to the levels it was like even 50 years ago. It will take an effort that would pale in any kind of activity the United States or the United States government of the nation has done. And so we're still a ways to go on that one. It would be curious to see where environmental issues play out in the voting booth in 2020, because we clearly are seeing more people talking about it. We clearly see the younger generation more activated, but how will youth activation turn into ballot box voting in November still remains to be seen.
Marco Gorman is a professor at Maryville College. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for the time.